With me in the studio to sift through the Homeland Security reorganization are David Korn, Washington editor of The Nation, and David Brooks, senior editor at The Weekly Standard. Gentlemen, welcome.
Good to be here.
Hello.
Biggest reorganization since the Truman era. Who are the winners and losers here? David Korn, start with you.
Well, the old saying is that God is in the details. There literally are millions, if not tens of millions, of details to be worked out on this reorganization plan. Hard to see how it's going to happen the next 3 months. I think a big winner, though, is President Bush. This puts him out ahead of the story when he had been falling behind. He had a flip-flop on his support for this. And it, I think, takes a lot of the oxygen out of all the other politics that might otherwise be occurring on Capitol Hill. So it's going to be very hard for the Democrats, who are looking for an agenda to push going into the elections in November, to get much steam up on anything else while we're going through this massive reorganization.
David Brooks, would you agree with that?
I basically agree. I think certainly the winners were any caffeine makers, because worthwhile bureaucratic reshuffling is not exactly the most exciting thing, but we are all excited by it. Certainly the losers were the cabinet secretaries, aside from the new one who's going to be created. One of the interesting ways this was done was that the White House staff, really 7 or 10 people, met together in a secret cabal for about 10 days, put together this whole plan. And the reason they did that was because if they let it go public, then every cabinet secretary on earth would be approaching President Bush with some three-ring binder saying, there's a reason I should keep the Secret Service in my Treasury Department. And Bush would have to fend off all these guys. The Bush administration, secrecy is its middle name, but it did this quite ruthlessly. And so lots of agencies lose lots of power, lots of little private armies, lots of money.
Quite remarkable that this was kept secret until the very last minute.
You have to take your hat out to them. I'm not a big fan of secrecy, and they've done it across the board on so many other issues. But it was quite stunning that they could put together this giant plan. You go back and, you know, to the old New Deal days, and you think about FDR bringing in, you know, tens and 20s and hundreds of people to work on all the various alphabet agencies. These guys really did it on the back of an envelope, and that's why we're still waiting for a lot of details. And I think while there was a tactical reason for doing this, it certainly would have maybe served the administration in another way had it actually reached out to the Democrats who had been pushing this, and Republicans on the Hill too, like J.C. Watts, and saying, let's sit down and work this out together, rather than say no, no, no to this, and then, oh, by the way, we're jumping ahead of you. You know, Bush came to Washington saying he wanted to change the tone, but there's not really much tone changing when you act with such secrecy.
It is interesting that this appears to be a move towards a sort of top-down military-type hierarchy, as opposed to the kind of decentralized business plan model that's been popular in recent years. Is that a direct response to 9/11, and are we going to see more of it? David
Brooks? Yeah, I think it is. I think the correct comparison Bush really drew was to Harry Truman. At the beginning of the Cold War, you really did need fundamental restructuring in a more militaristic manner, and the same way here, restructuring to face the war on terror. The essential thing that caused all this was Tom Ridge coming to office and finding he was toothless. That when, say, the anthrax thing hit, he couldn't coordinate the various health agencies, couldn't get them to do what he wanted aside from begging and pleading, because they didn't answer to him. So finally, there will be somebody in the cabinet to whom they do answer, whether happily or not. He will control their budget. So there will be some central authority figure.
David Korn, is this return to big government, big agencies a good thing?
Well, I'm hoping it works out for the best. I think there are a lot of hurdles to overcome. You take an agency like FEMA. FEMA is going to be put into this new super agency. FEMA primarily works on hurricanes 364 days a year, and then if a terrorist event happens, then it's called into that. So now they're going to be part of an agency where the number one priority is not their chief mission, and they're going to be working and answering to people who may not care much about hurricanes and floods in the Midwest and so on. So it remains to be seen how that culture is going to fit in with the overarching culture of this new agency, and I think you can have questions down the line of that sort. I'm very interested in how they're going to handle the intelligence side of this. One of the four major components is intelligence coordination analysis, and that's something that the Director of Central Intelligence is already supposed to be doing but isn't. And is this going to add another bureaucratic player to the intelligence community mix, or actually impose some order upon it. We won't know for a long time about that.
Any thoughts on that, David? What about the intelligence component of this new cabinet department?
Clearly the weakest part of the whole agency, because first of all, this agency will not be able to investigate people. That'll be up to the FBI. They won't even be able to see the raw FBI files. They'll only be able to see the process stuff, which if pre-September 11th, that would have told you nothing because the important information was left out. And then they won't be able to arrest people. So you've really got a straight line within the FBI from investigation to arresting. And then off on the side somewhere is this new agency where the information will supposedly flow. But it seems to me in the real world of bureaucratic life, the information will flow, if it flows at all, on the straight line in the FBI.
Of course, there were some cynics who said it wasn't any coincidence that President Bush unveiled this plan on the very day that the Senate Judiciary Committee began its public televised hearings looking into the apparent intelligence failures that preceded September 11th. Is that a fair analysis?
I'm not sure they were trying to divert attention from that particular hearing. I was actually at the judiciary hearing yesterday morning, and, you know, the beepers and cell phones started going off at 10 a.m. as the hearing was taking off, and you saw one reporter after another sort of leaving to do the stories in preparation for the speech that night. So it certainly had that impact. I think overall, the White House was obviously concerned that in the media and in the sort of the political landscape, you know, it was getting trumped by these stories. It looked like it, you know, hadn't been on the ball before September 11th, and there was a lot of momentum building behind the plans in Congress to go ahead and do this.
In fact, there was a quote from some administration source suggesting that President Bush had said, better to do it ourselves than have it done to us, and so they put this plan out instead of getting one that the Congress had hatched. David, what's your sense about the cynics and diverting attention from the headlines? Was that this certainly came up very quickly.
It is interesting how Bush flip-flopped on this just a month ago. He was saying we didn't need another cabinet agency. But this, they sometimes project the image of omniscience and omnipotence. But the Bushies historically, especially in Texas, were very quick to hop on somebody else's good idea, claim credit for it, and declare victory.
David Brooks of the Weekly Standard and David Korn of The Nation, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.